Okay, Pesachim, Kuf Yud Dalet. We are starting with the words Amar Rabba Bar Chana. The Gemara starts off Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Shimon Bar Marta Amar Rab Mishum Rabbi Yosi Ishu Tzal Minayin Shein Sholim B'Kaldayim. How do I know that I'm not allowed to ask the Chaldeans? Who are the Chaldeans? So the Rashi quotes over here that they're Balei Ov. Balei Ov, people communicate with the dead and are privy to certain information, pieces of information, as a result of their conversations. That's Rashi. The Rashbam over here says no. That's not who we're talking about over here. We have a pasuk that says Al Tifnu El Ha'ovos, the El Hayidonim. We already know in the Torah that you're not allowed to have communications with them. I don't need a Gemara to tell me something. It's Torah Shebichtav. It's explicit in the Torah. So therefore, Anisha Mati Chozim BeKochavim VeChenikar. So Rashi describes them as astrologers, people who look to the stars and give you your future based on the astrology, not astronomy, but rather astrology. Okay. Anyway, that's the Rashi's explanation. But the point is that you're not allowed to speak to them. You're not allowed to ask them questions about your future. In other words, you cannot predict your future based on something that was told to you by an astrologer. How do I know that? Shenemar, going back to the Gemara, Tamim Tiyem Hashem Lokecha. Okay. So we have to have a certain tamimus with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have to have the kind of emuna where, our fate is not going to be dependent on some sort of astrology, but rather it's going to be dependent on whatever the hashkacha is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how do I know that if I have a friend who's greater than you in one matter, that you have to give him kavod? Shenamar, and the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Sefer Daniel, Kokabel Dai, Revach Yisera Bey, Umaka Sislak Musa Akomachusa. Fine. So another piece of advice, which is that someone has more knowledge than you, you have to give them kavod. So Tosos over here, you're going to find the Tosos on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. It's the second Tosos. So he writes over here, Tzarich Lenhog Bo Kavod, Bishaloli made me menu. So we're not talking about somebody who taught you. Somebody who taught you Torah. So once again, that's an obvious point. I don't need over here this particular member to tell me that I have to give kavod to somebody who taught me Torah. Obviously. No, we're talking about somebody who didn't teach you something, but yet, he happens to be proficient in a particular area above you, you have to give him kavod. Tosa says that's the chiddush of our Gemara over here. And finally, a third point that is attributed to Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, back to the Gemara, Yosheves al Damtar Asur Lashamish. Somebody is sitting on Damtar, so you're not allowed to have Tashmash Ad Kama, Amarav Ona. So Rav says a full Ona. So over here, there is a lot of explanation that's necessary in order to understand and appreciate the Gemara over here. So let's go back. The Rashbam explains that Yosheves Adam Tor, Isha Shekaloye Yemei Tor Shalavi Yelal Arba'im VeEchal Zachar Olal Shmonim VeEchal LeNekeva Shim Tere Achshav Tehinida Asur LeShamish VeAfapi Shelo Ra'asa Dehov LeImudi He Achshav Lios Meshameshes Imri Asag Zera Shema Tere VeTishamish. So the Rashbam explains beautifully, succinctly, that we know that after a woman, just disclaimer for all of us, and that is that, and we know this already, and that is that we don't practice Dam Tahor nowadays. It already goes back to the period of the Gaonim, where Dam Tahor is not practiced anymore. So everything I'm about to say is not put into practice. But, according to the strict letter of the law, Min HaTorah, so let's say a woman gives birth to a boy. Let's just deal with one example. So a woman gives birth to a boy, so for 7 days she can't be with her husband. So that is Tumas Leda, just for having given birth to a boy. So for 7 days, she can't be with her husband. Then from day 8 until day 40, so she is what's called she's going through her Malos. She's counting now to the 40 days, where upon the 41st day, she can bring Karbanos, and then she'll be able to go into the Beis HaMikdash and eat Karbanos herself. But meanwhile, from day 8 until day 40, any blood that comes out of her is called Dam Tahor. That dam tahor that comes out of her, that means to say that she could still be with her husband despite the fact that she is discharging. Okay, so a special dispensation that's made for a woman postpartum, after having given birth to a boy from day 8 to day 40, the dam that comes out of her, the blood that she discharges is going to be considered dam tahor. Okay, so what the Gemara now is telling us is the following. So now from day 7 to day 40, so the husband and wife are together despite the fact that she's discharging. Okay, an exception that's made, obviously, to Hilchos Nida. The Gemara in Chulin talks about the idea that for everything that the Torah is Oster, the Torah is Matir. And this is one of the examples that's given over there. that under normal circumstances a woman discharges, of course you're not allowed to have relations with her, but this is a notable exception, and that is a discharge that occurs postpartum. So now you're after day 40, so now you're on the eve of the 41st day, so that's it. So the husband and wife cannot have tashmish together if she discharges. So what the way the Rashbam understands the Gemara is that on the night of the 41st, so there has to be abstention. Even if she didn't discharge, there has to be abstention between husband and wife. Why? So it's very simple. Because they've been habitually being together despite the fact that she discharges. And habits are a hard thing to break. And especially you're talking about intimacy between husband and wife. There's obviously a taiva for that. And so therefore what the Chachamim demanded is that there has to be a stoppage period and an abeyance period between intimacy between husband and wife. How long? Well, that's exactly the Gemara's question. And the Gemara's answer is an ona. So there has to be an ona's stoppage of intimacy between husband and wife just to get them out of the habit to have relations, to realize that if in fact she's going to be discharging, so from this point going forward, you're not allowed to have relations. Okay, now how long is an ona? So here also we have an interesting debate between Rashi and the Rashbam. So the Rashi writes over here right in our daf, it's Yom V'Laila, says Rashi, a 24-hour period. The Rashbam says, no, it's not a 24-hour period. It's a 12-hour period. Okay, and elsewhere, we also have machloks in whether an ona is 24 hours or 12 hours. But okay, you have it over here. All right, that is all number, that's the third halacha of Rabbah Bar Bachana. Okay, so the Gemara now just quoted a halacha that was said, three halachas that were said over in Rabbah Bar Bachana, who said over in the name of Shmuel Bar Marta, who said over in the name of Rabbi Yossi Ish Hutzal. So the Gemara over here is going to just make a really technical point. We're three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Tana hu Yosef Ishutzal, hu Yosef Abavli, hu Isi ben Gur Aryeh, hu Isi ben Yehuda, hu Isi ben Gamliel, hu Isi ben Mahalo, umashmo Isi ben Akav Yashmo. Who? Okay, so he had a lot of AKAs. He was also known as. And why did he have so many different names? I don't know. Anyway, let's go on. Rav Yitzchak ben Tavlahu, Rav Yitzchak ben Chalkayahu, Rav Yitzchak ben Ila'ahu. Okay, so the Gemara says that this Rav Yitzchak ben Tavla also had alternative names. And again, the Gemara over here is just really being extraordinarily detail-oriented, but good. That's the job of the Gemara. We're now on the very top of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara now continues. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha Deshmaisahu, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas Deagadata. Now, in terms of identifying which Rabbi Yitzchak we're talking about, if we're talking over in Halacha, so when you see Stam Rabbi Yitzchak, that's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha. If we're saying Agadata, and the Gemara just Stam says Rabbi Yitzchak, it's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas. V'simancha, and the Gemara says, and as a memory aid, so Shimunai, Achai ve, we have in our Gemara Achai ve Re'ai, probably the correct citation is Achai ve Ami. Either way, when you say Shimunai, that's Shmaitata, and so it's connected to Acha. So, okay, good, that's a mnemonic. It's a good mnemonic if you remember the pasuk. But anyway, but the point is that the Gemara over here is being extraordinarily detail-oriented in terms of giving proper attribution of which Rabbi Yitzchak we're talking about. We're in Kuf Yud Aleph Aleph, we're three lines down, and just a little bit more before we get to the Mishnah. We have been giving life advice now for a daf of Gemara, and prior to that, for already 3 days, we've been talking about inyanim of mazikin and shadim. So this has been some interlude over here in the 10th parak of Pesachim, and we just have a little bit more to go before we go back to the seder and back to the halacha. Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishmei to Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. So the Gemara quotes another halacha by Rabba Bar Bachana, going all the way back to Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai, and that is Echol Batzel V'Shev Batzel. So you eat onions, you can sit in the shade. And the way the Rashbam understands it is that if you're eating onions, that means that you're eating within your means. And that's fantastic. And that means to say that you get to keep your home. You won't have to give up your home. You're living within your means. Good. You're not going to mortgage your home against a good night dinner. Oh, okay. And you'll eat fine as well. You're just eating within your means. And you get accustomed to eating geese and to eating, now I'm going to translate it as chicken, but, you know, to us, chicken is the cheapest meat out there. But anyway, but you understand, Bismana Gemara, so we're talking about delicacies over here. And the point is that if you get used to eating delicacies, so you're going to eat yourself out of house and home. And here, the expression is to be taken literally. Pachos mimachlech umishtech v'tosif al dirascha. In terms of allocation of your finances, so less on food, more in your home. And the simple pshat over here is that invest more in your home than in your food. Obviously, in other words, you need to eat and you want to eat and good. But in other words, don't overspend on the food that you eat. But the Gemara is kind of saying overspend a little bit on your home. But that's not, you don't have to say the Gemara that way. It could just simply be a way of proper allocation of your resources towards your home versus towards your food. Kiyasa ula amar mitla matlim b'marava da'achel alisa tashi b'alisa. So they give the following mashal in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so in Eretz Yisrael, this is what people would say. If you eat the alisa, the Rashbam over here says it is a fatty tail. And again, the idea is over here is that you're really spending significant money in terms of eating. So tashi ba'alisa. So what are you going to do? You're going to go hide in the attic. You see the play on words over here, alisa. The first one is referring to the tail of an animal. The second one is talking about the roof of your house. And what does that mean? It means basically that you're going to be hiding from creditors. Okay, so you're spending so much money on your food. And you, when it comes time to paying rent or paying mortgage, so you couldn't do so, and in comes the creditors, and they're knocking on your door, and you go up to the roof, and you hide in the roof. Okay, that's the expression. And as part of this mashal, it's a little alliteration over here. So if you eat your vegetables, that's the way the Rashbam explains it. So what you're going to be doing is that you're going to be sitting comfortably. And sitting comfortably means that basically you're going to be able to afford the house that you live in. Okay, Adkan. That takes us down to the end of the Divrei Agadata, Divrei Eitzas that were given by the Gemara, and here we are in the Mishnah Kuf Yudalet. And now it's been a ride, but now we are up to the second Mishnah of Pesachim. So you talk about a really long sugya that started off the opening Mishnah here. The Mishnah goes all the way back to Tzadi Testament Beis, 99b. And now here we are on today's Daf Kuf Yudalet as we are now up to the second Mishnah. And here, from this point going forward, as far as the Mishnahs are concerned, so here we go through the Seder. And the framework, the structure, the skeleton of all these Mishnahs are going to be the Dal Kosos, meaning that we're going to go through the Seder through the perspective of the Dal Kosos, coast number one, coast number two. What happens by coast number one? What happens by coast number two? So the Kosos actually become the framework of which we're going to be seeing the Seder. Mazgulo Kosriksha in the Mishnah over here talks about the pouring of the first cup of wine. And now, as we know, first cup of wine, so what does that mean? It means Kiddush. We're making Kiddush over the first cup of wine. So what's going to be the Nusach of Kiddush? Now, hopefully this should sound familiar because we did this back in Brachos, back in the eighth parak of Brachos. So we asked this very question in terms of what exactly is going to be the Nusach of Kiddush. So the Mishnah over here tells us the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Same way it related back in Masechta Brachos. Now the Gemara in Brachos was talking about Stam, a Kiddush on Friday night. Over here we're talking about the Kiddush of the Seder, but really it comes out to be the same idea. Meaning it's Yontif, we're Mekadosh Yontif, much like we're Mekadosh Shabbos. And so what's going to be the proper Nusach? So we have the classic machlokes. So Beis Shammai Omri Mevarach Layom V'achar Kach Mevarach Layayim, Beis Hillel Omri Mevarach Layayim V'achar Kach Mevarach Layom. The machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is basically going to be what is the proper sequence. Do I first make the bracha on wine, then make Kiddush? That's Beis Hillel. Do we make the bracha on Kiddush, follow them by wine, and that is Beis Shammai. Now, if you think about a standard Kiddush on Friday night, so you have to do, I've said this before, but it's important to realize, so you have to take Vayichulu and you have to take that away. Meaning we say Vayichulu, but of course that's not part and parcel of Kiddush. We've incorporated it into our Nusach of Kiddush, but that's just simply a paragraph that we say, acknowledging that this is Zech L'Masa Breishis. And so therefore we say the paragraph of the last day of creation. Okay, good. But that's not part of Kiddush per se. Kiddush is the bracha on wine, followed then by a bracha dedicated to Mekadosh Shabbos. That's Kiddush. What's the proper order? So that's the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. What is that machlokas predicated on? So that's a wonderful question. Let's go on in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Dvarim Shebein Beis Shammai Beis Hillel B'Seuda. So what is going to be differences between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Now the Mishnah over there in Brachos actually gives us many differences between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but obviously we're quoting the Mishnah over here as it relates to our Mishnah, so we're only going to be focusing on one point, and that, of course, is going to be the point of Kiddush. So Beis Shammai Omer Mevarech Hayom V'Acharkach Mevarech Hayayin. So we'll start with the Shita Beis Shammai, right? When presenting the Machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we almost always start with the Shita Beis Shammai, and part of the reason why is because, just in terms of the way it's presented in the Beis Medrash back in the day, so Beis Shammai's position was always presented first. Okay, so Beis Shammai Omer Mevarech Hayom V'Acharkach Mevarech Hayayin. So first you make the Berachas Hayom. It's not what we do. Obviously, we don't follow like Beis Shammai. So first we make the Bracha of Sher Kiddushanu B'Mitzvah Sefer Tzavanu. Okay, and we make the Kiddush. Now over here, it happens to be that we're talking about Kiddush on Yontif. The Mishnah over there in Shabbos is talking about Kiddush on Shabbos, but it's the same basic idea. And two reasons why Beis Shammai says. Number one, Shayom Garin Le'Yayin Shiavo. Why are we having a cup of wine right now? We're having a cup of wine right now because it's Kiddush. So what's the Goring? What's the cause? The cause is the Kiddush. So if the Kiddush is the cause, so the causality should be the one that is coming first. Meaning first make the bracha on Kiddush. And then you make the bracha on wine. That's argument number one. And the second argument, Kvar Kiddush Hayom V'Adayin Yayin Lova. And in terms of sequence of the day, what already has happened? So the day is already Mekudosh. We're assuming, of course, that you didn't make early Shabbos, early Yontif, but Shabbos has already entered. And now what? So now, in terms of the sequence of the day, Shabbos has already came, so what should I acknowledge first? I should acknowledge the day of Shabbos, which means first make the bracha on Kiddush, and then afterwards make the bracha on wine. So two arguments that were given by Beis Shammai in terms of why the bracha on Kiddush should come before the bracha on wine. Now we turn our attention to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Amar Mevarech Hayayin V'Acharkach Mevarech Hayom Mipnei Shehayayin Garim LeKiddush Tei Amer. So, first of all, in terms of causality, so Beis Hillel says, in response to Beis Shammai, I'll give you causality. Causality is the wine. Meaning, why am I making Kiddush right now? I'm making Kiddush because I have wine. If I don't have wine, so I can't make Kiddush. The Rashbam points out, yes, it's true. You can make Kiddush over bread, but bread just is serving as a substitute of wine. Meaning, you have to make Kiddush over something. You can't just simply make Kiddush without wine. Ain't Kiddush ela b'makom seuda. And you remember the Rashbam about 10 days ago, about 14 days ago, the Rashbam explained that one of the arguments that we gave in terms of ain't Kiddush ela b'makom seuda is the idea that mistama the chachamim attach Kiddush to the meal because we're having wine during the meal. But anyway, so argument number one for Beis Hillel is going to be that the yain is garm l'kiddush. I can't make Kiddush without wine. So that talks about the primacy of wine, and that's why the bracha of wine should come first. That's one. Davar acher, and a second argument, is that birchas hayayin tadir, or birchas hayamein tadir, tadir v'shein tadir, tadir kodem. So, and also they have the standard argument of tadirus, of which one is more frequent. The bracha on wine is more frequent. We drink wine every day. Everyone here knows I don't drink wine every day, but we drink wine every day, and you make a birchas hayayin every day. Kiddush happens, obviously, much less frequently, once a week, right? With Yontif, maybe more than once a week, but still, it's much less frequent than the bracha on wine. So just on tadirs alone, tadir v'shena tadir, tadir kodem. Good. That's the two arguments that are given by Beis Hillel. And then the Braisa ends kind of strangely, v'hilchasa k'divrei Beis Hillel. And you know the halacha falls like Beis Hillel. Now this Braisa then ends off with the psak halacha, that the halacha falls like Beis Hillel. In just a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, don't we all know that? Meaning, isn't that how it always ends? Which is not true. It doesn't always end that way. There are notable exceptions where we do paskin like Beis Shammai, but those are exceptions. The general rule is that we paskin like Beis Hillel. So that's a funny ending to the Braisa. Stay tuned. Anyway, my davar acher. So our first question that we're going to be dealing with is the davar acher of Beis Hillel. Right? Beis Hillel says, I'll tell you why you make the bracha on wine first. So number one, yain gorm lekiddush. Shetei amer. And then davar acher, let me give you another reason. So the Gemara just wants to know why is Beis Hillel giving a second reason. V'chitei ma'asam tarti v'achachada hachinami tarti ninu. Tarti v'shenu tadu tadu kodem. The Gemara gives a funny answer. The Gemara says, well, you know, Beis Shammai gave two arguments, so Beis Hillel also needs to give two arguments. As if to say, and the Gemara kind of says this, that if Beis Shammai would have given two arguments and Beis Hillel would have only given one argument, oh, so then we would have gone with the two arguments over the one argument. I mean, there also is, whatever, I'm just thinking out loud, but isn't there also a function of quality? Meaning if the one argument of Beis Hillel is an outstanding argument, so wouldn't it just be able to dispense with the two arguments of Beis Shammai? But okay, Anyway, the Beis Hillel wanted to match the number of arguments that were given by Beis Shammai. Fine. Anyway, v'halacha k'divrei Beis Hillel pshita. And then the Brei ends off with the halacha being like Beis Hillel, and the Gemara says, now isn't that obvious? So the Gemara says, da hanafik baskol? In other words, we had a baskol that came out, and the baskol says that the halacha follows like Beis Hillel. And so once the baskol comes out and says it, so now, what do I need the Braisa to say? And the halacha follows like Beis Hillel. So which the Gemara's response is, Ibaisema Kurim Baskol. So it could very well be that the Braisa over here was authored, edited, before the Baskol came out. Which, by the way, would make this Braisa really old. Because Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel was at least 100 years before Churban Bayis Sheni. And the idea that this Braisa now is predating the Baskol, that means that, and we made this point before, that the Nusach of Braisa, the Nusach of the Mishnah, probably was around for hundreds of years prior to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi finally organizing it. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is not the author, as more as he's the editor and the organizer. So, but anyway, okay, fine. So it could be that this Braisa was before the Baskol. Or it could very well be that it was after the Baskol. And it could also be that we're following the Shita of Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua says, Hey, Mashkechem Baskol. Now this takes us back to the Gemara Bam Metzia. We all know the Gemara Bam Metzia. Right, the Gemara Bam Metzia is found on Daf Nun Tes, where the Gemara over there brings down a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim over whether or not a particular oven was tahor or not tahor, and they were going back and forth. And Rabbi Eliezer was convinced that he was right, despite the fact that he was fighting against everybody. And he said that if the halacha follows like me, so then the river should start running in a different direction. The river, in fact, did start running in a different direction, and other miraculous events occurred. To prove that Rabbi Eliezer was receiving a haskama from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then so far, it went so far that a baskol came out and says that the halacha falls like Rabbi Eliezer, to which Rabbi Yeshua's response over there in the Gemara Bam Metzia is ein mashkichim a baskol. That's lovely that the baskol goes ahead and supports you, but that's not the way halacha is decided. Halacha is not decided by a baskol. Halacha is decided by us, by Chazal, by the Chachamim. Okay, so obviously major points to discuss over here. I'm not going to discuss them right now. It's really just it's too large a topic. But just to cite the Tosas on the Daf. So the Amrei Mashkichim Bebaskol VeIm Tomar Maishna De Kaimelan Kebaskol De Beis Hillel VeLo Kaimelan Kebaskol De Rabbi Eliezer. So Tosas over here asks the obvious question: what just happened over here? So we had a Baskol giving an endorsement to the Shita of Beis Hillel. And apparently we're following that Baskol. And meanwhile, the Baskol in Bab Metzia that's supporting Rabbi Eliezer, we don't follow that Baskol. We dismiss that Baskol. Right? My bane Baskol a Baskol. Right? We're starting to hear different Baskols, different types of Baskols, and Vigay Shlomar. And so again, it's a really big question. We're just going to focus on Tosus's answer over here. Vigay Shlomar da'acha beitzola havi ruba. So over here, our Baskol is not really giving us a decision. Over here, we know Beis Hillel is the rov. Beis Hillel represents the majority. And Acharei Rabim Lahatos, and we're going to follow the majority. So that's not the Baskol is not really providing for us a halachic basis of determination. We know we follow like Beis Hillel because he's the rov, because they're the rov. But it also happens to be that we also know that Beis Shammai are really sharp and really smart. And so therefore, I might have thought that there should be a netia, some sort of tilt in the direction of people who are really smart. And the Baskol is just there to affirm that no, that you're going to be following the rov and you're not going to be following the chidud, the sharpness of Beis Shammai. Masha Enke in Tosfos points out, Avahasam de Baskol haya keneged rabim, lo kaimelan hachi. So Ubasko lo yatsa ela lechvodo kidekamrin and hasam and hashamayim yochichu. So and Tosfos says, look, and now with that same idea in mind, let's go to the Gemara Bam Metzia. Rabbi Eliezer is arguing against everybody, so that means to say that based on the rules of Acharei Rabim Lahatos, so you're going to follow everybody. We're not going to follow like Rabbi Eliezer. The Basko was just there for the kavod of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was an adam chashav. He was a gaon. He was a tana, and a highly respected one at that. And so therefore, the Baskol was there to just give a certain amount of kavod HaTorah to Rabbi Eliezer, but not to tell us in which way the halacha should follow. Okay? Again, a really extraordinarily large topic, but at least just a basic question, Tosfos on the Daf, which we got to cover. Okay, so, what just happened? So Kiddush. So we poured the first cup of wine for Kiddush. The Nusach of Kiddush is first the Bracha on Borei Pri HaGafen, then followed by the Birchas of Kiddush itself, Mikadosh Yisrael V'Azmanim. And now we're moving on in the Seder. So what happens next in the Seder? Heviu Lefanav. So they bring in front of him. Now the Gemara over here, the Mishnah over here, is unbelievably terse. What they bring in front of him, what do they bring in front of him? So you take a look at the Rashbam over here. So Rashbam says, Yirakos. Acher Shabir Chalayayin. So you made the bracha of Borei Pri HaGafen, and then you're going to bring vegetables in front of you. Now that seems to be the pshat, although quite frankly, not everyone's in agreement. And right over here, you can see Tosos disagrees with the Rashbam. But right now, we're just going to keep with the pshat of the Rashbam, and that you're bringing vegetables in front of you. Now vegetables, what's going on with vegetables? Right, why are we having vegetables? So again, all of us have experienced the Seder, so we all know the Seder HaSeder, so it doesn't surprise us, but you understand though, in that in a typical meal, in a standard meal, vegetables is not what's next. In other words, what happens after Kiddush? I'll tell you what happens. We all go wash our hands and we all start the Seuda. And we have bread and we start a Seuda. And over here, bringing out vegetables after you have Kiddush, that's really strange. And we all know this, but good. Let's say it all together. And that is that we do strange things on the Seder night. We want to get people curious. We want to get them to know what's going on. I'm sorry. We want them to wonder about what's going on. And so therefore we do strange things. So we're going to take our vegetables now. We're going to start eating our vegetables, which is really an oddity. And that doesn't happen any other point in time. Now I know the way that we educate in Baruch Hashem, right? We have an education system and thousands upon thousands of people here in the Golos are getting educated. But as a small consequence of the educational system. So none of the kids are wondering, hey, we're eating vegetable. That's really weird because they're all prepped. And the fact that we're going to be eating vegetables that night. In other words, from preschool already, they're being told that expect the vegetables to come after the kiddush. So, therefore we end up force feeding the questions to them. You know, you're going to ask the following question. Right? The questions, right, back in the day used to be extemporaneous. They were spontaneous questions. Right? That's so funny. You're dipping vegetables right now? Why in the world are you dipping vegetables right now? That's weird. Okay. Anyway. The bright side, of course, is that many kids in this country are getting educated. So anyway, hey, Vila Funov. So they bring the vegetables in front of him. Atabel. Bichazeris, so you're going to take your chazeris. Now that's the maror, that's the bitter. It's the bitter vegetable, and you don't need bitter vegetables for karpas. And we're going to make this point very clear. You could use any vegetable you want. Famously, Rabbi Tais of Elizabeth, Zichron Levracha. So he would use a banana just to tell people that the bracha you make on bananas is Borei Pri HaAdamah. But you could use whatever vegetable you want, and it doesn't have to be a bitter herb. The bitter herb is coming up later in the Seder. The Mishnah is just dealing with a scenario in which all you have is a bit of herbs, meaning you went out to the store, you got everything you needed for the Seder, and you forgot another vegetable. Okay, but I got enough romaine lettuce. So good. So you're taking out the romaine lettuce for karpas. So, and the next time you're going to do that is going to be at the actual point in the Seder where you're eating maror properly placed after the matzah. And that's what the Mishnah says. Ad shemagia leparperas apas, until it becomes an accessory to the bread. Bread over here is a reference to the matzah, and the parperis refers to an accessory, which means that the maror properly placed immediately after the matzah, right? Which is the proper placement of maror. So the Mishnah, it is a little bit convoluted, but the basic point of the Mishnah is that the only vegetable you have is maror, is romaine lettuce. And so right now, after Kiddush, I'm supposed to be eating a vegetable. Right now, the only vegetable that I have is romaine lettuce. Okay, so I'm using that now for karpas. Okay. Heviel fun of and you eat. I'm sorry, and you dip the karpas and you eat the karpas. Then the Mishnah goes on to instruct heviel fun of matzah v'chazeres v'charoses v'shnei tavshilin alpha pishen charoses mitzvah, and then you bring out what we call the Seder plate. Okay, so what we call the Seder plate. So the Mishnah doesn't call it the Seder plate. The Mishnah just tells us what goes on the Seder plate. So what goes on the Seder plate is matzah and chazeres. That's the maror, the romaine lettuce. Again, I say romaine lettuce. You understand it could also be horseradish as well. I'm not taking a position. What's better? Okay. Anyway, it's a discussion. I'm just calling it romaine lettuce. And also the charoses and two cooked foods. And the charoses itself is not a mitzvah. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, mitzvah. It is in fact a mitzvah, the charoses. Now in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so it's at this point in time that you're bringing out the actual Karban Pesach itself. Okay. The Seder plate of the Mishnah, it does not sound at all like our Seder plate. Okay, I would say standard Seder plate of, you know, I have not done a survey, so my number is fabricated, but 90% of Seder plates out there has the matzah where? So it has the matzah underneath. In other words, on the top you have, right, what's standard nowadays? I think six different bowls, right, in a certain configuration, and basically what you're putting on top of it is two cooked foods, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the daf today. And on top of that, so you have the salt water and the karpas and maror and then maror again and that's the standard Seder plate nowadays. And then basically what happens is that the matzah is placed underneath. Okay, pshuto shel mishnah. That's not the case. Pshuto shel mishnah is that the matzah belongs on the Seder plate. Now sometimes it's going to be covered, but the matzah itself belongs on the Seder plate itself. Okay, so, and again, much lengthier discussion in terms of basically what happened to our Seder plate, right? You want a good Shabbos HaGadol drasha, right? I don't think I have Rabbanan listening to me, but what happened to the Seder plate, right? The Mishnah over here gives pretty clear instructions in terms of what the Seder plate should look like, and meanwhile, the matzah now is tucked away underneath the Seder plate. Okay. Anyway, let's continue in the Gemara. Our Gemara, our last topic of today, which is covering really the entirety of the Amud Beis, is going to be a simple question, and that is a simple question. A major machlokus, but a simple question of whether or not mitzvahs require kavanah, mitzvahs do not require kavanah. So we're gonna be flipping back and forth between the Amud Aleph and the Amud Beis, because you really have to see the Mishnah in order to appreciate the Gemara's point. But anyway, let's just first read the Gemara, and then we'll go back and we'll read into the Mishnah. Amar Reish Lakish Zos Ameris. So over here, an observation of our Mishnah, from Reish Lakish. Zos Omeris Mitzvot Srichos Kavana. You see clearly in our Mishnah that mitzvot do require Kavana. Okay, now this question, Mitzvot Srichos Kavana. So first of all, what is this discussion? It's the following. Now, first and foremost, we could say it really clearly. When you're doing a mitzvah, so the best mind state that a person should be is being mindful of the mitzvah that they're doing. They're fulfilling a mitzvah of the Torah, and they should be mindful that they're fulfilling a mitzvah of the Torah. So it's not always hard. In other words, it requires concentration. It requires energy, expenditure of your attention span, our limited attention span. But meanwhile, we have to be mindful of the mitzvah that we're doing. That goes without saying. That's not even open for a discussion. However, what is open for discussion is what if I did the mitzvah mindlessly, which unfortunately happens. But I'm not here to talk about myself. So you do a mitzvah mindlessly. So do you get credit for having done the mitzvah if you did the mitzvah without kavanah? And kavanah over here, by the way, just simple. Kavanah over here means being aware of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to do this mitzvah. I'm doing this because it's a mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if I do a mitzvah without kavanah, so do you get credit for doing the mitzvah? That's the discussion that we're having right now. So mitzvah tzrichas kavanah, mitzvah sanat tzrichas kavanah. And you're going to find this discussion come up a number of times throughout Shas. We discussed it back in Brachos. We're going to be discussing it. We discussed it back in Erevin. We're going to be discussing in the fourth paragraph of Rosh Hashanah. And I'm sure I just can't think of right now, but I'm sure there are many other times in which the discussion happens throughout Shas. It's a really basic question. And what is it? It turns out to be a machlokus. Machlokus tanayim, amarayim. Okay, so it's a major debate in terms of whether or not mitzvahs require kavanah or do not require kavanah. And what the Gemara's point now is that I think our Mishnah is going to be stating clearly that mitzvahs do in fact require kavanah. This is the observation of Reish Lakish. So first, let's read it in the Gemara inside. Zos omeres mitzvot shrichos kavanah kevin de lo beidan chiyuva damar hu da acholei bebar pri adama hu da acholei v'duma lo yichavin lamarer hilkach bay lamahadu ladbul l'she marer di isak adach. I know it's a long sentence, but I'm just going to read the whole sentence and then I'll explain. Di isak adach mitzvah lo bay kavanah lamelach treti bule v'hatava lechad ezimna. Okay, so the argument of Reish Lakish is like this. Look, our Mishnah takes us into a funny Seder, where the Bala Seder only has one type of vegetable. He only has romaine lettuce. Okay, now obviously the Mishnah could have given a simple scenario in which the Bala Seder has another vegetable, right? Celery used to be really popular, potatoes are popular, whatever. He had another vegetable. But instead, for our Seder and our Mishnah, he only has romaine lettuce. So he's forced now to eat romaine lettuce twice. Once in the karpa section of the Seder, and a second time he's going to eat it later in the mar section of the Seder. Now you'll notice that the Mishnah says, and under those circumstances, what is he going to do? He's going to eat the romaine lettuce twice. He's going to eat it at the karpa section, and he's going to eat it again later at the mar section. And now Reish Lakish says, you see that mitzvahs require kavanah. Why? Because when he ate the romaine lettuce the first time, so he ate it by when making the bracha bar pri adama. Now the language of the Gemara is a little bit tricky, because the Gemara says, you look at that third line of the Gemara, v'dilma lo ichavein, and maybe he didn't have kavanah. So the Tosfos over here spent a lot of time with that language. What the Gemara means, says Tosfos, says, and he for sure didn't have kavanah. And he didn't have kavanah because he's making the bracha bor pri adama, and he didn't have kavanah for maror. And meanwhile, so what is that telling us now? So did he fulfill the mitzvah of maror? No. That's why the next time in the Seder, after the matzah, he's going to eat the maror again. And Reish Lakish's argument is, let's say for a moment that mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah. Mitzvahs do not require kavanah. So when you ate romaine lettuce the first time, so what did you do? So presumably what you did, apparently what happened now is you fulfilled the mitzvah of maror. I wasn't intent on fulfilling the mitzvah of maror. But if I held mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah, you don't need intention. So by virtue of the fact that over here in our Mishnah, the Mishnah is telling us that you're eating maror again later that evening after matzah, so that would seem to be proof positive that mitzvahs do in fact require kavanah, and you didn't have kavanah the first time you ate it. This is all as per the argument of Reish Lakish. Mimai. So the Gemara says, okay, that's wonderful. That's the argument of Reish Lakish. We could counter that argument. Dilma lola mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah. Maybe not. Maybe we could assume that mitzvahs do not require kavanah. And then to the question of why am I eating romaine lettuce twice? Once in the carpet section, once in the mara section. I'll tell you why. Because we got to be strange tonight. We got to do things that are strange. We got to prompt the kids to ask questions. And so maybe in Achinami, I did fulfill the mitzvah, because mitzvah saying tzrichas kavanah. But I'm doing it anyway. I'm going to eat it a second time anyway, because I want the kids to wonder, hey, you're dipping the romaine lettuce not once, but twice. What are you doing? And maybe you'll tell me, okay, so then why wouldn't the Mishnah give me the example of shar yirakos? Meaning, if that's really the point of the Mishnah, so then have the Mishnah give me a simple scenario in which you have other vegetables. So the Gemara says, no, yeshmin and shar yirakos have, I mean, hechadika shar yirakos who debi in treti bule. If the Mishnah would have done that, so then I would have come out with an erroneous conclusion. Because I would have then thought that the requirement to dip twice would only be under the circumstance where I have another vegetable. But if I only had romaine lettuce, for whatever reason, we don't have a single other vegetable out there, I might have thought the halachi is don't dip twice. So that's what the Mishnah wanted to teach us, that even if all I have is but just the romaine lettuce, nevertheless, there's a requirement to dip twice, once in the carpet section, and again later in the mar section. So our Mishnah does not prove mitzvos tzrichos kavanah. In fact, you can make an argument that our Mishnah would subscribe to the idea of mitzvos ain't tzrichos kavanah. Or to say it simpler, there's no proof from our Mishnah. The Ode, and furthermore, Tanya, we learned in the following brayso, achlan demai yatza. If you eat a vegetable which is demai, purchased from an amma aretz, unsure as to whether or not trumas amaisos were taken off, a chumr de rabbanan where we have to take off trumas amaisos from it, and we didn't for whatever reason, and we ate it, you're yotze. And the reason why is because the Gemara in a number of places explained, because potentially you could be in a position where you could eat the demai. You could give up all of your possessions and be an ani, and an ani is allowed to eat demai anyway. So achlam balom is kavin yatza. So the Braisa says very clearly that if I eat the mara without kavana, you're still yotze. And lechatzayin yatza, if I eat it in portions, you're yotze. But over here, eating it in portions, meaning less than a kezais at a time of avash, lo yishev ben achila lechaverta, yosem echdei achilas pras, but you have to eat it within the time span of kedei achilas pras. So over here in the Braisa, it's a Braisa, and it says very clearly that you don't have to eat it with kavana. Again, I'd like to reiterate that obviously the Braisa is not condoning that. It's better to have kavana, but in the event that you didn't have kavana, you're still going to be yotzei. All right, so tanaihi detain. So the Gemara says, okay, so in defense of Reish Lakish, who's of the position that mitzvahs do require kavana. Now, I'm not sure, by the way, if that statement is true. Meaning, what I can say for sure is that Reish Lakish says, sees it in our Mishnah, meaning he clearly is of the position that the Mishnah holds that mitzvahs require kavana. Whether Reish Lakish himself holds that way, Maybe yes, maybe no. But anyway, but the Gemara points out some machlokas tanayim. The tanya we learned in the brayso, Reb Yosi, or Marafa Pishatiba bechazeros mitzvah lahavi lefanav chazeros vecharosus v'shnei tavshilin. So here in the brayso, Reb Yosi says that even though you dip the romaine lettuce once, mitzvah lahavi, it's required to bring it again later that evening as part of the seder plan and as part of the maru section later in the evening. The Akati, the Gemara says, okay, that's a brisa. But Akati mimai demakas of Rabbi Yosi mitzvah saints rechus kavana. Really, that brisa proves to you that mitzvahs require kavana. I can make the argument that Rabbi Yosi says that mitzvahs do not require kavana. V'had debin and treiti bula ki echad to have hakir letinokos. And again, why am I using the romaine lettuce twice that evening? Once in the karpa section and again later in the mara section. So maybe just again to be weird and to prompt the kids to ask questions. Imkei my mitzvah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Braisa, read the Braisa carefully. The Braisa says, mitzvah lahavi lefan of chazeres. It is not recommended. It is not just to be weird. It is to fulfill the mitzvah, which means that up until this point in time, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah because you did not have kavana in that first round. Okay, so from the Braisa, it seems pretty clear that mitzvahs do require kavana. So basically, we have a machlokas tanayim, whether mitzvahs do or do not require kavana. Okay, we're almost done with today's daf. Just one more short section that we need to do. My shnei tavshilin. It says over here two cooked foods, meaning as part of the seder plate in our mishnah. So you have two cooked foods. You have on the seder plate matzah, chazeres, charoses, matzah marur, and the charoses that comes along with it, and two cooked foods. Right, by the way, making for a total of five items on the. On the seder plate, right? Again, our modern seder plates look a lot different. I already encourage you to go hear a shiur on this, but it's a worthwhile shiur in terms of what happened to the seder plate. But meanwhile, just now a simple pshat in the Mishnah, two cooked foods. What's going on? What are these two cooked foods? So the Mishnah doesn't tell us what those two cooked foods are. And so now the Gemara is going to fill in the blank. What are those two cooked foods? And then while we're asking the question of what are those two cooked foods, we can also ask the question, why do we have two cooked foods? So my shnei tavshilin. Amar Rav Huna silka v'arosa. So Rav Huna's two cooked foods on his seder plate was beets and rice. Okay, so for us Ashkenazim, right, that would seem a little bit strange. Right, but we know we're Baruch Hashem. We're most of the way through the Masechta, so we know that rice is not chametz. It's a minhag Ashkenaz not to eat rice on Pesach, but it's a minhag Ashkenaz. So that means to say that there was a time and Mizman Hazeh, there's an entire population of Jewish people who eat rice on Pesach. It's not chametz. So on Rav Huna's Seder plate, so beets and rice. So those are the two cooked foods. Rava was
an excellent Talmud. Rava, hearing that Rav Huna would have beets and rice as his two cooked foods on his Seder plate, so Rava would make sure to get beets and rice as well, just like the Rebbe did. So the Gemara now makes the point that we made earlier in the Masechta, all the way back on Daf Lamed Hay, but now we get to reiterate the point again, and that is nobody's worried about the position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. The Tanya we learned, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri Omer always min dagano v'chayavan achimut zukaris v'adam yotzei b'yedecha v'asa b'pesach. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says that rice, in fact, is a mechametz, so it does ferment and it does create chimuts and you can make matz out of it. So rice is a grain, according to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Now, you and I can call it a grain, but in other words, the point is that we dismiss the position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, meaning it's not the kind of grain that is comparable to the five grains of wheat, barley, spelts, oat, and rye. But rather, it's what we would call a more of a vegetable than a grain. Now, by rice, it is very confusing because, and we discussed this back in the sixth parak of Brachos, we do make a mezonos as a bracha rishona, despite the fact that we don't make an alamechi afterwards. Okay. So admittedly, rice is confusing, but what it's not, however, we could say definitively, it's not chametz. So good, and the Gemara says, and even though Rav Yochanan ben Nuri is of the position that it is, but we don't subscribe to his viewpoint. Chizki Amar afilu dagu beitza sha'alav. Now, in terms of the two cooked foods, and now we go back to the Amoraim, in terms of what they would use for the two cooked foods, we've yet to articulate why there are two cooked foods on the Seder plate. It's coming up in just a moment, but meanwhile, Amoraim and what they would use for the two cooked foods. So here, according to Chizkiah, it would be fish and egg. Rav Yosef Amar Tzarech Shnei Minei Basar. So Rav Yosef says it's got to be two pieces of meat, echad zechel Pesach, echad zechel chagiga. One to remind us of the Karban Pesach and the other one to remind us of the chagiga. Not the chagiga of Yontov, but rather, says the Rashbam, chagigas yedalid. The chagigas are basar, which we discussed extensively. So that's the Karban chagiga that's brought on the 14th, not on the 15th. It's not the standard Yontov chagiga. This chagiga, the one offered on the 14th, is there to accompany and help supplement the meat intake that we have this evening, so that we have sufficient amount of meat for everybody at the table. Everybody's got to eat a kazais of the Karban Pesach, but it just may not be enough. So therefore, to supplement the diet of meat that evening, so we're going to have the Chagigas Yedalit. The two cooked foods, says the Gemara, says Rav Yosef, has to be specifically meat because it's there to remind us of the two Karbanos. Now, I think, although I'm not sure if I'm right about this, the other Amoraim are in agreement in terms of the why, meaning the two cooked foods are Zecher, LePesach and LeChagiga. It's just that for them, it doesn't have to be meat, meaning just any cooked food is a simple reminder. Now, it is a little bit strange, by the way, that it's cooked foods, because considering the fact that neither the Pesach nor the Chagiga are allowed to be cooked, so that part's a little bit strange. But nevertheless, it's a Zecher. It just simply reminds us. Ravina Amar Afilu Garma Ubishula. Ravina says it could be a bone together with the sauce that it's cooked in. That is going to be sufficient for the two cooked foods that you need on your Seder plate, which is Zecher. It reminds us of the Karban Pesach and the Karban Chagiga. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Pshita, I know it's funny, but that starts a sentence. And it starts a sugya, which really goes well into tomorrow's daf. So this is going to be an excellent stopping point. And meanwhile, let's review today's daf. We finished off all the eitzas, three halachas that were said over in the name of Rabba Rabba Chana on the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Min Beis. You're not allowed to look into astrology. Somebody knows more than you, even if he didn't teach you. Still, you have to give him kavod, kavod haTorah, and if at the conclusion of Dam Tahor, so there is a legislated period in which a husband and wife have to be abstinent, and that is for an ona after the Yemei Torah, after the Malos. So there has to be an ona's worth of abstinence between husband and wife to basically get them out of the habit of having tashmish, even though she had a discharge. On Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, a lot of assigning proper attribution. Who is the Rabbi Yitzchak of Agarata? Who is the Rabbi Yitzchak of Halacha? And then just one more piece of advice, and that is that more money should be allocated to your home than to your diet and to your dinner. Obviously, eat healthy, but also don't overspend on eating. Okay, and then we did the Mishnah. We did two Mishnahs this morning. Right, two more Mishnahs here in the 10th parak of Pesachim. One is the Kos Rishon of the Dal Kosos, which is over Kiddush, and the proper order of being Bor Pirag Gafen, followed then by Kiddush, and with the obvious idea over here that that first Bor Pirag Gafen, then Kiddush, which is Shitas Beis Hillel, not Shitas Beis Shammai, and we went over the arguments for Beis Shammai, the arguments for Beis Hillel. The Baskol came out that said that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Sometimes we listen to the Baskol, sometimes we don't listen to the Baskol. All right. The second Mishnah is then after we make Kiddush and after we drink the first of the Dal Kosos. So then Hevil Lefanav. Then the outcomes. And according to the Rashbam, it's talking about the vegetables that we're going to be eating for the Karpas. And then you eat the Karpas, and then out comes the Seder plate. And on the Seder plate, you have matzah, chazeres, charoses, and two cooked foods. And whether or not the charoses is a mitzvah or the charoses is not a mitzvah. And then in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, now is the time for the Gufa Shel Pesach to come out. Okay, and on the Amud Beis today, so one of the more basic discussions that comes out throughout Shas, and today is Adap Sachem, Kuf Yadalid, is one of the places in Shas where it's discussed, and that is whether or not Mitzvah Tzrichos Kavanah is a Mitzvah Sein Tzrichos Kavanah. And Reish Lakish says that our Mishnah over here would seem to be proof positive that mitzvahs do in fact require kavanah, because our Mishnah gives us a most unusual scenario in which all you have is romaine lettuce, and meanwhile, even after having eaten it earlier in the evening, you're going to have to go ahead and eat it after the matzah, meaning in its proper place. And why? Because you were in Yosef the first time, right? Because mitzvahs require kavanah, and you didn't have kavanah the first time. That is Reish Lakish's argument, but the Gemara counters that argument, and the Gemara says, no, you don't have to say that. You can counter by just simply saying that we're eating the mara twice because we just want to be weird, and we want the kids to prompt the kids to ask questions. And that's all. And then what came out in the Gemara is that the machlokes satanayim, whether mitzvahs require kavana or do not require kavana. And the conclusion of today's daf is the two cooked foods that is required on a Seder plate. What are those two cooked foods? Various amaraim give their opinions in terms of what the cooked food should be. And why do we have the cooked foods? The Gemara says, zecher l'karm Pesach and zecher l'karm chagiga. Adkan.